I do enjoy, Ryan, the timing of the Fed pivot that's happening, that we're calling it, that is right before the Bitcoin happening, huh. Right before the Bitcoin ETF approval. The stars are aligning in a very big way.
The money printer is getting ready to fire back up. Bankless Nation, it is the third Friday of December. It's Friday morning. That means it's time for your weekly roll up. David, what do we have in store for him?
We got the Fed pivot. What does that mean for risk assets? I think we know. We'll talk about the details. Did we really get the Fed pivot? We'll understand why. We'll unpack why we think that. And also, airdrops. It's airdrop season. Some hotly anticipated airdrops have been confirmed, some more than confirmed, with plenty of details. So we'll go into that as well. Ryan, what do we got after that?
Liz Warren wants to ban crypto in the US, and she doesn't care who knows at this point, David. So we're going to talk about that. And Pudgy Penguins, they're doing some things on layer twos and in the metaverse, including some things around number go up. So we'll talk about that. And that's not the only layer two stuff. What else, David?
Coinbase turning its base chain into a real world asset chain too. We're going to get some new types of assets going on to base chain with some of the efforts out of Coinbase. All of this and more. And it's very, very bullish, Ryan. We got the Fed pivot. This very, very bullish weekly roll up. But first, we're going to talk to our friends over at Layer Zero, who just announced Layer Zero V2 as of this morning of recording, Thursday. And there are details for you awaiting with unified semantics, which if you're a developer, you probably know what that is. I don't. But developers can build applications on any supported chain and can retain complete control over security. There is a brand new 14-minute video that I watched, Ryan, of Brian, the co-founder of Layer Zero, that is on their pinned tweet at their Twitter, Layer_Zero_Labs. There is a link in the show notes. If you want to just learn something about bridges, it's a super educational video. And so, I mean, I know a decent amount about bridges, but yeah, even I learned a thing or two watching this. And so that is the call to action. Go click the link in the show notes to go learn about bridges from Brian Pellegrino himself.
Actually, this gets a big endorsement. I saw this week from Eric Voorhees because they're talking here about a censorship-resistant, permissionless, and immutable omni-chain interoperability protocol. That's what Layer Zero is purporting to be. And, you know, Eric Voorhees giving the standing clap around that. So, yeah, go check out that video, guys. All right, David, before we get into markets, I got to say, I saw these videos and images on crypto Twitter this week. And this is what, so David is not recording from his regular location in New York City, in Brooklyn. You are actually recording probably, I think that this is from your house in Seattle.
I'm back
right?
home in Seattle. Yeah. So I took a little detour up in Banff before coming here. So me and Hart Lamber from across.
Is crypto not risky enough for you, David? What are you doing climbing ice sheets?
You gotta up the ante, brother. After on your third cycle, like the volatility just doesn't do it for you anymore.
Okay, so you gotta tell us, what is it like to climb up a sheet wall of ice? This is a video here. Is this you?
Yeah, this one's me.
All right, climbing hard.
It's nice because with rock climbing, you have to put your hands in specific places. But with ice climbing, you can, you know, stick your toes or your ice tools wherever you want. So like the whole thing is climbable. It's pretty cool. It's pretty fun. It's the only thing you got to worry about is like when you hit your tool into the ice, like ice shrapnel can like come back at you. So you gotta be careful.
This is not like free solo. Like you are totally like wired in. You're connected.
That is a rope. That is a rope connecting me. Yes. Okay. If I fall, I did not fall one time. But if I had, I would have fallen onto a rope.
Oh my God. Well, good to have you back, man. It's great. All right. Well, while you were gone,
where do you think the Fed pivot came from?
The Fed
Ryan?
Pivoted.
What do you think I was doing?
I don't know. Is this more back
as soon
to the
as I get
speed?
Down, the Fed is like, we're going to lower interest rates.
So you got a Powell horcrux up there. Well, let's talk about Bitcoin on the week. So are we up? Are we down? Did you help us there in your ice climbing journeys, David?
We were going to be down, but then we ended up flat. So Bitcoin flat on the week. The crypto market's kind of flat on the week. We retraced a bigly amount after a lot of the frothiness that was accumulating for the last, I don't know, a month of straight up only, I would say. And then we saw kind of like a negative 15% across the market day across the board. But then the Fed pivoted. And so we ended up flat on this week. So Bitcoin up 1%, call it flat. We are ending the week at 42,700. Ether started the week at $2,340, down 1% to $2,300. New supply lows, though. We got new supply lows in Ether. So we are down to the low supply of 120 0.2 million, going to break through that 0.2 million probably in this this episode level. And then Bitcoin, the Ether Bitcoin ratio also flat on the week.
Okay,
so it could have been a bearish week, but we got a flat week.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned there, I just want to embellish this a little bit. So Ether supply at all time lows. So we're burning
no,
some ETH
post-merge lows.
Post-merge lows. Of course. Post-merge of course. Lows. We can't go back right. to the...
But yeah, but time started
lows.
As a
come
merge.
On. Yeah. It's, you know, the clock started 455 days ago. And also, did you know this? While we were talking about Bitcoin, 13 years ago, to the day this week, as of December 13th, we just celebrated the anniversary of Satoshi disappearing. He just went away.
His last message back. On his the internet.
His last or their last message. This group of people, whoever Satoshi actually is, vanished 12 years ago. No, 13 years ago.
13 years ago.
Never came back.
Yeah. You got to really like tip the hat to him. Being anonymous on the internet and retaining an anonymity after you make billions and billions of dollars in this network, that's hard. That's a hard thing to do. He covered his tracks extremely well.
Somebody knows who he is, don't you think? CIA, NSA, some three-letter agency.
I don't know, man.
Knows who this is.
I don't know. I mean, I think the industry
can't be that hard.
It's Hal Finney. Like, I think everyone would place their bets and say it was Hal Finney. But no one really knows. No one really knows.
Well,
I can tell you who it's not. It's not Craig Wright. I know that.
I can tell you it's not me either, David. I'll go on record and tell you that I'm not Satoshi. let's take a look at the crypto market cap. What are we at on the week?
We just poked through $1.7 trillion, coming up to $1.71 trillion. Some really healthy numbers in the total crypto market cap.
I haven't seen 1.7 in a long time since the last bull market.
A long time. Remember when we did like a year and a half of bankless weekly roll-ups and you were asking me what is the crypto market cap? And the answer was $1.1 trillion.
Yeah. It was just like, it was just
so long. I hated
trillion.
That question.
It like, was
why are you asking the question, Ryan? It's 1.1. It's
I mean, we had about 12 months around like the 1 trillion mark and it would go a little bit below, a little bit above, and we were just crabbing out. But now we're getting close to 2 trillion, David. So pretty soon you can say 2 trillion. Speaking of numbers going up, on layer 2
chart.
Beat, layer 2s, we are at all-time highs for total value locked in layer 2s. That is $16 billion worth of value locked. And let's see, activity as well on layer 2s at all-time highs. This was an interesting chart from growthepie.xyz, which is another fantastic website for tracking layer 2s. In terms of transaction fees, David, earlier this week, we hit one day that marked all-time highs in terms of fees paid by layer 2s to Ethereum, 1.25 million. That is part of the reason for the ETH burn. Part of the reason ETH supply is at all-time lows, at least since the merge, is because we are burning more transaction fees and layer twos are actually consuming block space on Ethereum layer ones. I mean, Ethereum economics, Ethernomics, if you will, looking quite healthy going into this bull season. I mean, there's a lot of talk about layer twos and or layer ones and kind of like ETH transaction fees being high and that being bearish. It's not bearish to me, let me tell you that. And you know, layer twos on the uptick is looking pretty nice as well.
If you tallied all of the assets deposited onto layer twos, aka like aggregate layer two TVL, it would be number 10 in market cap behind Lido staked Ether, head of Avalanche.
Wow. So the climbing on the charts. David, tell us about some tokens of the week. So now that we're in the bull market, we got to keep an eye on the tokens that are pumping. You got two. What's the first one?
First one is Injective, coming in at plus 80% on the week.
Wow.
It is a layer one. I don't know much more than that, other than a lot of the crypto Twitter influencer trader people are all talking about it. I mean, that's what happens when a token goes up 80% of the week. A Bonk still coming in at number two on the week at plus 70%. But the other thing that we have that I have listed here is an NFT, Ryan. Pudgies definitely deserve a shout out. If you look at the market cap from December to now, they are at from like a five ETH floor to where they are now at 11 ETH floor.
This is all
doubling, an NFT doubling. Is that all time highs?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, good for Pudgies.
Previous all-time highs was a floor of about six. Is this right? Does this go back far enough? Six.
I don't know if it goes back far enough, but 11 seems, it definitely could be a Pudgy all-time high.
All-time high, at least ETH denominated.
I fumbled my pudgies at 1.25 ETH.
Oh, you sold? You sold your pudgies? You kept your CryptoPunk.
Yeah, it's like... Kevin at CryptoPunk. That one was okay anyway.
So pudgies are now number four? The number four PFP collection?
Yep.
Just number four
behind Bored Ape and Mutant Apes.
Man. Yeah. Doing quite well. And what Crypto accounts Punk, for the turnaround?
Dude, never thought I would have seen the day. CryptoPunks, Bored Apes, Mutant Apes, Pudgy Penguins.
Well, like, why did they turn around so hard? You have a take on that?
New management. Yeah, Luca and the people that bought the Pudgy Penguin IP just are absolute Chad executors who turned the IP around and started actually building stuff. Like, they're the reasons why Pudgy Penguin stuffed animals are in Walmart. And later on in the show, we're going to talk about the Pudgy Penguin metaverse world, the thing that the Bored Ape, other world was promised to be. I think Pudgy Penguin's going to beat them to the punch.
Oh, wow. Just a good old-fashioned execution. That's why they're pumping it, at least at the early stages.
Yeah, here's a take from Mike Ippolito. NFTs are under-owned by crypto Twitter, but everyone believes in them long-term. The setup for an absolutely biblical FOMO rotation is here. NFTs remain the fat pitch in crypto right now. And this is after Mike put out a poll of saying how much of crypto Twitter has at least 10% of their wealth in NFTs. And everyone gave the smallest answer of 5 to 10%. So Mike is saying everyone is underexposed to NFTs.
You think it's going to be PFPs again this time? We're getting into speculation territory. It's like my problem with NFTs.
It can't just be the same thing over again.
Right. That's what I mean. I just like, I'm bullish NFTs. I just don't know what particular NFTs. So maybe you could help me with that, David. Maybe we'll do an episode on that.
I've been telling you.
I want a different answer, though. I want an answer
that
is...
You see it in the back of my podcast studio every single time in Brooklyn. It's a gigantic CryptoPunk.
Nah. That's, you know, that's like old news,
you
David.
Just want the
I'm looking
one.
For the new meta, the cheap one. The new
CryptoPunks?
Well, let's talk about the big news in markets. This is in trad markets, but it affects basically everything. And that is the long-awaited Fed pivot. Did we just get the Fed pivot this week, David?
You know, we can only interpret if we are getting the Fed pivot. It's not like the Fed is going to come and say, it's not like Jay Powell.
They don't use those words.
Like, yo, we're pivoting. But here's what happened. We got the third instance in a row in which they did not raise rates. Rates stayed unchanged.
Okay.
And then previously, they were going to signal that in 2024, they were perhaps going to cut rates once. That was the status quo going into this meeting that happened yesterday. They continued their not raising rates, so third time in a row. And then now they are signaling that there are three cuts coming next year.
Three cuts?
So currently, interest rates are at between 5.25 to 5.5%. And they said that they are going to get to 4.6% by the end of 2024. So they are accelerating in their interest in lowering interest rates. And the markets responded as if it was the Fed pivot. Like, the NASDAQ and SPY are in LFG mode. Yeah, I think NASDAQ is like poking into all-time highs. Yeah, it's about to hit. The SPY is about to hit all-time highs. Coin stock, which I think is a pretty good barometer of just like risk appetite, because like what happened when we had low interest rates last time, like, you know, crypto assets just mooned. So people perhaps are using coin stock as an exposure to assets, to an asset that is exposed to low interest rates. So coin is breaking out through like a high is not seen since May of 2022. It's at $150 a share. The markets are responding as if we got the pivot.
Yeah, I love this Bloomberg headline, David. Powell brings tequila to the Wall Street rate cut party. So Powell's pouring drinks here. And there's a clip here of his comments on the recession. You want to hear what he says about the recession?
I think you can say that there's little basis for thinking that the economy is in a recession now.
Little basis for thinking the economy is in a recession now, so we're kind of getting close to mission accomplished. He followed that up by saying, like, who knows what'll happen in 2024, but like, we're cutting. So what does that tell you? I think one of the unspoken things about this, you know, other than, you know, Powell not using the P word for pivot, of course, is the debt, the underlying U.S. debt and the interest payment on that debt. I was just looking at this morning. U.S. interest payment on an annualized basis is about $700 trillion, David, right now, on top of its colossal amount of debt. So it has to pay that every single year. That's more than the U.S. Pays for defense, pays for its military. Okay. So
wow, the higher, you don't usually hear anything being higher than that.
Right. The higher the Fed rate, of course, the greater the interest payments. And so that's some other unspoken pressure that is pushing these rates, I think, down. It's something, of course, Powell can't say. I don't know if Yellen will comment on that, but this interest payment is increasing. And if it went beyond 5%, if interest rates went to 6, 7, 8%, I mean, this just ratchets up until it's a massive portion of U.S. GDP every year. And then how is that sustainable? So there's always going to be this downward pressure. And I think that's something unspoken that is starting to apply. So Powell may not like it, but he kind of has to pivot at some point. And this might be the opportunity.
This is what we've been saying ever since they turned on the interest rates in like early 2022. Everyone has been saying, well, they're going to pivot at some point. Well, they're going to pivot at some point. Well, they're going to pivot at some point. And why is because you know that the Fed can't bankrupt the government by keeping interest rates high. So we always knew that the Fed pivot was coming. We just didn't know when or where. We always knew it was on the horizon. I do enjoy, Ryan, the timing of the Fed pivot that's happening, that we're calling it, that is right before the Bitcoin happening, right before the Bitcoin ETF approval. Like, the stars are aligning in a very big way.
The money printer is getting ready to fire back up. David, do you want to get to some predictions? I know we did a couple of episodes on predictions, but one that didn't make a full episode because we just didn't have time this year was Bitwise predictions. Mm-hmm. They had 10 of them, and you pulled a few of them out. And this is from another Ryan. How do you pronounce Ryan's last name? You went to college with this guy, right? So you know who Ryan is.
Yeah, his last name's Rasmussen, but you can go ahead and call him Rattleson because the little secret of Ryan is he gets rattled really easily.
Oh, dude. You could say that because you're friends, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Ryan. I'll apologize on David's behalf. Okay. So what were the predictions that you pulled out? Because you only pulled out Ryan's good ones, right?
Only the good ones. Yeah. 1, 3, 4, 6, 7, and 10. So half of them, more than half of them are pretty damn good.
Good job,
if you
Ryan.
Want to read the rest, there is a link in the show notes. Actually, this tweet thread did absolute numbers. So congrats, Rattleson. Bitcoin, number one. Trading above $80,000 from the two catalysts of the Bitcoin ETF and the halving. Feels pretty safe, but bullish, but safe prediction. $80,000 for Bitcoin in 2024. How do you feel about that one, Ryan?
I feel like it's too safe. I'm like, not okay.
Too safe?
Yeah, way too safe.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure he's trying to get as many like points on the board as possible. Okay, safe predictions. Okay. Prediction number three. Coinbase's revenue will double, beating Wall Street's expectations by 10x because Coinbase trading volume surges in bull markets, of course, and they have launched a bunch of new products. And so basically, Coinbase is going to just blow people's blow expectations out of the water. You want to do the next one?
I also think that's kind of safe, but also good, right? And beating Wall Street's expectations by 10x. Well, Wall Street obviously had bad expectations then, I think. Prediction number four, more money will settle using stable coins than using Visa. You could see this chart where we're kind of like not quite neck and neck in 2023. It was just stablecoin settlement was about half that of Visa. And so this is a significant increase in stablecoin settlement. The next one, number six, is Ethereum revenue will more than 2x to 5 billion as users flock to crypto applications. What do you think about that one, David?
I think that's about right, especially as layer twos and layer two activity demand goes up only. And value and assets on layer twos also go up only. You know, when there's more money on layer twos, there's more economic energy on layer twos, which means we're burning more ether in layer twos, which means Ethereum's revenue is going up. All right. The most bold prediction of the bunch, Taylor Swift will launch NFTs.
Wow.
Man, that is bold. And I am so absolutely bullish, here for it. I can't really call myself a Swiftie, although I do enjoy my fair share of Taylor Swift songs.
Was usually Ryan a Swiftie in college, David?
I know his girlfriend is. Yeah. Anyways, last prediction. Ethereum will drive the average transaction cost to below 1 penny. And he is, of course, talking about Ethereum and its layer twos, because that's where you're going to get 0.01 cent transaction fees. And that is going to be spurred by Dankun, aka Proto Dank Sharding. That's EIP 4844, which is probably going to come in 2024, early 2024.
Safe prediction. I'm very confident in that. David, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, airdrops. We're getting all the airdrops. We've had an airdrop meta already arrive on the scene here in December in holiday season. And you just know that, there's a bunch of layer twos and others that are going to launch their airdrop in January. or at least Q1. And we're going to get the details to you, as well as Liz Warren has some notifications for us. It is a bill called the Anti-Digital Asset Money Laundering Bill, something great. Extremely disconnected from reality. We're going to talk to you guys all about that and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred exchange for buying crypto, all of that cheap, cheap Bitcoin that's not going to be cheap later. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the links in the show notes to getting started with Kraken today. Kraken knows crypto. Kraken's been in the crypto game for over a decade, and as one of the largest and most trusted exchanges in the industry, Kraken is on the journey with all of us to see what crypto can be. Human history is a story of progress. It's part of us, hardwired. We're designed to seek change everywhere, to improve, to strive. And if anything can be improved, why not finance? Crypto is a financial system designed with the modern world in mind. Instant, permissionless, and 24/7. It's not perfect, and nothing ever will be perfect. But crypto is a world-changing technology at a time when the world needs it the most. That's the Kraken mission, to accelerate the global adoption of cryptocurrency so that you and the rest of the world can achieve financial freedom and inclusion. Head on over to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures Inc. PVI, doing business as Kraken. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities. Are you launching a token? Is it already live? How are you managing the legal and tax for providing token awards for your team? Toku simplifies everything about managing token grant compensation, and you can get started with them for free. You'll have access to top-notch legal and tax support to handle the distribution and management of tokens for your team. Toku caters to every step in the process, from user-friendly legal templates for granting tokens to tracking vesting periods and calculating withholding taxes. Toku understands every grant structure, token purchase agreement, restricted token awards, restricted token units, token options, and all the other ones. Toku is already simplifying this today for leading companies like Protocol Labs, DYDX Foundation, Mina Foundation, and many more. You can learn more about how Toku can help you streamline your token management and get started for free. Visit Toku at toku.com/bankless or click the link in the description below.
David, tell me about airdrops. It feels like airdrop season. What do we got coming up?
We got a confirmation of the Starknet token airdrop. Definitely one of the most anticipated airdrops of all time. People saw the writing on the wall. They're like, yo, they're going to do a token. They have to do a token. And now they are giving away details about that airdrop. So they start out this tweet announcing some of the details that says, Darknet is about each of you. Every user, builder, and member of our community, existing and future, is a critical piece to building our network into the future of decentralization for generations to come. The success of Starknet depends on this. We love the crypto ethos. TLDR. We plan to allocate over 1.8 billion Stark tokens out of a total supply of 10 billion across multiple initiatives to drive adoption and growth of the Starknet blockchain. So here are some of the first wave of details that we've gotten. 900 million Stark tokens for the fair, decentralized, and transparent distribution of Stark over multiple programs and phases. This would be the airdrop and perhaps a second round of airdrops and perhaps more targeted airdrops, but generally retroactive distribution for reasons into the community. Second, network rebates in Stark, 900 million Stark tokens as well, another 9%. If you have spent money on gas or transaction fees in Starkware, you will be given a Stark kickback to compensate you for your gas fees. And then also 50 million, pretty small, but definitely meaningful, 50 million Stark tokens to boost DeFi activity. This is liquidity mining or incentives, etc. And then more. This is what they said, 1.8 billion. That was a lot.
So 1.8 billion,
yeah, 18% of tokens.
Yeah, I'm just going off of like you just napkin math here, but like what Arbitrum and these other layer twos is about $10 billion market cap, let's say. So let's say Starknet is similar, then each token would be worth a dollar, let's say. So that would be $1.8 billion worth of airdrop that they are pushing out to the community. So that's a pretty big one. I mean, there have been larger airdrops, but this has got to be one of the top five, I would say, of all time if that happens. And who knows? It could be worth less. It could be worth more. The market will tell us as soon as it's released what the Starknet tokens are worth.
It's going to be worth more. It's going to be worth more. I'm sorry. It's going to be worth more than both.
We don't have to be sorry. That sounds great. I'll take more. That's not the only one.
I'm taking the over on that one.
You promised too. What's
Layer Zero. Layer Zero Labs, one of the, again, very, very bot farmed airdrops. So we're going to have to see how they overcome that challenge. But Layer Zero, they tweet out, has always been built with the ability to have a native token within the protocol, as can be seen in the immutable code launch on day one. Basically, TLDR, we'll state now in no uncertain terms that there will be a Layer Zero token. Its distribution is something we're committed to getting right. And expect it to
they
happen within
in
the
no
first
uncertain
half.
Terms. Oh,
in
wow.
In no uncertain terms. Yeah. It's how you know. And they say it's going to be distributed in the first half of 2024. So Starknet, they also didn't give a date or a time, but, you know, they just told about details. So I'm going to go ahead and guess earlier in 2024. So Starknet first, probably Layer Zero after that. You know, at that point, the ball is rolling. At that point, like I remember my take way back when, where I said like, yo, as soon as the market heats up and some a big airdrop happens, it's going to queue to all the other unreleased airdrops. Like, yo, it's airdrop season.
Yeah.
And I think with the Jito drop last week last week, and like hundreds of millions of dollars going into the pockets of people, that was like, okay, this is the green light. Everyone release your token.
Well,
now.
We also
it's airdrop season.
Not only Jito is the Celestia token, TIA, that was probably like 3-4 weeks ago, I believe. And fully diluted valuation, $14 billion.
That is nice. Go look at that chart, dude. Scroll down and look at that chart. It doesn't go down. It goes only up.
Some of these things are getting a little silly. I got to be honest, David. This does not feel like the early stages of the bull market.
It's a little silly. Somebody was talking and commented under my like ice climbing in Canada picture, and I was like, yeah, he's just trying to get out of the US so he can go claim his. So
that's actually not a bad take. Another not bad take is don't miss it because you didn't do your homework. Okay, so all of these airdrops are chronicled in the Bankless Airdrop Hunter. David, I missed out on a 17k Jito airdrop because I didn't do my homework, my friend.
Wow, the minimum amount for a Jito airdrop recipient was $17,000. That's pretty good. The Uniswap airdrop was $1,200. We're up to $17,000 now.
I know. This is the part of the cycle where it pays to really be in crypto and to be doing your homework and to use all of these protocols. It's very much harvest season. So make sure you do your homework. Another PSA for you. David, there was a big scare actually this morning, the time of recording. I woke up on Thursday morning and all over crypto Twitter, a whole bunch of people were saying, stop using your dApps. Just stop. Just don't use any more dApps. Because there's like a phishing attack. And like when you read into the details of this, it seemed like there was some mysterious attack where if you were using your Ledger hardware wallet paired with some sort of either crypto wallet, like a MetaMask or just on a website using Ledger Connect, there was a way for an attacker to drain your funds. Okay. So this was circulating around crypto Twitter. Can you tell us some details on what was happening and like whether it's resolved or not?
So I think it is now resolved. We now know the details, but the TLDR, this is some coding developer language. I'm going to do my best here. A library that is used by many dApps maintained by Ledger was compromised, and then a wallet drainer was replaced. So think about a little snippet of code. That snippet of code that's maintained by Ledger was compromised, and a wallet drainer snippet of code was replaced. And so sometimes when you use your Ledger and it connects to MetaMask and then it connects to a front end, somewhere in the middle of that process is this Ledger library that this exploiter got their hands on and was able to insert a drainer. I don't think it was true for all front ends. So not all front ends were having this Ledger Connect library as part of their stack, but some of them were. And I bet you, Ryan, and me and Bankless listeners are like, I don't know which uses it and which doesn't. And so everyone is like, just stop using it. Stop, pause.
Yeah. And what it would do is
pause all trading.
It would do a man in the middle attack where it would just insert this rogue transaction into your device. And
right.
You wouldn't really know. So you'd look at the transaction on the screen, you'd click through and you'd click accept, and you ended up sending your funds to this this third party, this fisher, this hacker.
Mm-hmm. So your Ledger hardware wallet is totally fine. It is software that's on the internet that is compromised that takes a transaction from your Ledger hardware wallet and sends it out into the world. There is now a fix for this. You basically just need to clear your cache. Munit Gupta, who I think is from Polygon, put out this tweet that tells you how to do this. So there is a link in the show notes. And you, Ryan, go ahead and click that. Go and click that link. And then if you ensure that the version is 1.1.8, you will be good. Yeah, so you're good. Okay, so you see that original file /npm at the very, very top, connect kit 1.1.8. Yeah. You're Gucci. There is a link in the show notes. You can go click that link. You can follow suit and make sure that is 1.1.8.
And that's just
to
double check.
If it's not, go clear your cache.
Well, that's just to double check. Now I think the fix has kind of propagated through all of the CDN content delivery networks. And I think it's pretty much safe. But there was this narrow window of time where it was not safe to actually use your Ledger connecting to a wallet. And I got to say here, David, like, I guess my reflection on this is, we still got some work to do, my friend. Like, I love crypto, but knowing you could just wake up one morning, whip out your Bankless wallet, and like, you get this random message saying, hey, if you use your wallet today, you could be drained of all of your funds. That is bad user experience, my friend. That is not
bad.
We are not quite ready for normies when we have that level of user experience. So, I mean, just surfacing
that. But also,
that,
it's just like, this is software that helps normies manage stuff. Like, without this library in the middle, it gets more complicated. And so there's like this big problem, I'd say, where like, as much as Ledger is doing fantastic work, like, we're still dependent on them. And there's no way, I don't know, I'm sure there's some ways, but just like, it's a scary amount of dependency. And like, if it wasn't Ledger, it'd be someone else, right?
I've just like this year, David,
hardware wallet.
The last 3 to 6 months I don't know how many phishing stories I've heard from like crypto OGs. From like, this could have gotten me. This could have gotten you. This could have gotten many people listening if they had used their wallet during this period of time, right? Mm-hmm. And as you say, too many. We still have work to do here. Mm-hmm. Speaking of work to do, David, we still have some work to do in the U.S., I think, when we have senators saying things like this. You want to hear it?
Example.
No.
You know, we have something called the Bank Secrecy Act, which is how banks are required to monitor certain kinds of transactions that go through the system. It was written in the 1970s following 9/11. The law enforcement folks went back, looked at what had happened, figured out how the financing had made it through the system. And that's the last time that Congress updated the Bank Secrecy Act. What we need to do is we need to update it again, because there's a new threat out there. It's crypto, and it is being used for terrorist financing.
She goes on, David, a new threat out there. It's crypto. That was Elizabeth Warren, of course, senator from Massachusetts, 2 weeks ago on CNBC. So she was on the press circuit for some reason railing against crypto. Well, I think we found out more of the reason why she was on this press circuit. And that is, she was planning to launch a bill. And she has now launched a bill called the Digital Asset Anti-Money Laundering Act. It is absolutely terrible. It basically, David, kills DeFi in the United States. Some details. It kills crypto.
It kills crypto.
Like any peer-to-peer money system in the U.S. So a few details. Of course, you can go and read the bill yourself, but a few details from CoinCenter. It requires, if you have public blockchain infrastructure, so if you're Etherscan, if you run a validator, if you host a DeFi front end, say you host a Uniswap front end, it requires that you register as a financial institution. And as a financial institution, so David, you have an at-home ETH validator. Well, guess what, my friend? You would be a financial institution. So you'd have to identify and record the personal information of every user who used your validator software, basically do a full AML KYC risk compliance program, because you would be culpable. You would be liable as a financial institution if some bad actor actually push through a transaction through some of the blocks that you validate. You file reports about users when they breach their requirements at government requests. So this basically would kill Tornado Cash, Zcash, Monero, all privacy. It is bad, bad, bad. And this is what Niraj from Coin Center says. Make no mistake, while proposed as a solution to potential money laundering and terrorist financing, the bill is in fact a repudiation of liberal values and a move towards the types of surveillance and control prized by authoritarians like Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, and Kim Jong-un. So there you go, David. An absolutely atrocious bill. It has bipartisan support, by the way. So it's not just Liz Warren. She has a Republican senator who signed on, and the support of five other senators. So incredibly disturbing. And my take on this is it just unmasks what, do you hear Elizabeth Warren in that clip? She's talking about mm-hmm. how great the Bank Secrecy Act was, how great the Patriot Act was. I mean, she wants to append the financial surveillance system to our peer-to-peer monetary systems and delete and kill the idea of cash, delete the idea of me giving money to you without the government kind of knowing who I am and who you are. She wants to delete that idea entirely. And it's wow. I guess I'm at a loss for words as to why she is so forcefully trying to push this kind of thing through.
Yeah, that's the same kind of question I have about Gary Gensler's motivations. Why does Gary Gensler hate crypto so much? Why us? And why does Elizabeth Warren, in the face of fantastic, real, hard evidence that is way more comprehensive than that meager Wall Street Journal or Bloomberg article? Yeah. Which one was the one that she was cited in Congress?
Wall Street Journal, yeah.
Way more comprehensive and complete evidence to suggest the complete opposite of what she is saying. Yet she just doesn't care. She doesn't care about actual real facts that are presented in a very clear and coherent manner by industry experts who are aligned with government, which is Chainalysis. She doesn't care about them. It's just she doesn't want to talk to us, doesn't want to hear about the facts, just wants to ban crypto. And so my question is, where's the motivation? Why is the motivation? Where's the incentive for Elizabeth Warren to just come after crypto so hard?
Well, Ryan Selkis, actually, I asked him that question. He has a take on that. That is an episode that's coming out next week. I'll leave that take. But, the summary is control. He really thinks that Elizabeth Warren's end state aim is to create a central bank digital currency. It's just kind of we know best type of thing, and to control rather than let the people have a peer-to-peer money system. There's some good news here, David, and the good news is there's a low chance that this will pass, okay? So not only is it unconstitutional, you have the ability to contest it in the court system, that takes years. Warren seems to write a whole bunch of bills that actually don't pass. So during her 11-year-long career, she's written over 330 bills, and only one was enacted. So I don't know.
Oh, that's not a great track record.
It's not a great track record.
Wait, so then is it just for the show?
I don't, maybe, David, maybe. But we have to take these kinds of things seriously, obviously, and the fact that she has other senators signing on means we have to just impose it in its entirety. Right. So there you go. What do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, we got Pudgy World, perhaps the most successful NFT project to rise out of the bear, fulfilling its metaverse promise. And Elizabeth probably wants to make it illegal. Coinbase Layer 2, the base chain, going to be the home of real world assets. Is Coinbase going to take the real world asset throne? And we got some other updates from two other Layer 2s. Talking about cheap fees right after the cheap fees narrative sweeps through Twitter, all of this and more. But first, we'll talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially MetaMask Portfolio. I've said it so many times, it's now time to do the thing, which is open up your MetaMask Portfolio, because it is the bull market. That is your battle station. There's a link in the show notes to check it out. MetaMask Portfolio is your one-stop shop to navigate the world of DeFi. And now, bridging seamlessly across networks doesn't have to be so daunting anymore. With competitive rates and convenient routes, MetaMask Portfolio's bridge feature lets you easily move your tokens from chain to chain using popular Layer 1 and Layer 2 networks. And all you have to do is select the network you want to bridge from and where you want your tokens to go. From there, MetaMask vets and curates the different bridging platforms to find the most decentralized, accessible, and reliable multiple bridges for you. To tap into the hottest opportunities in crypto, you need to be able to plug into a variety of networks, and nobody makes that easier than MetaMask Portfolio. Instead of searching endlessly through the world of bridge options, click the bridge button on your MetaMask extension or head over to metamask.io/portfolio to get started. Introducing USDV, a better type of stablecoin. Currently, billions of dollars in stablecoin yield each year are paid to Tether, Circle, and other central issuers of major stablecoins. But what if yield could be shared with the protocols that use it? Those protocols, in turn, can decide how to reward their users. USDV shares its yield with a community of apps and developers that mint it. Every USDV is backed one-to-one by US Treasury bills, which pay yield. This yield flows out to the community of USDV issuers, so your protocol or app can get paid for helping end users convert other stables into USDV. This works thanks to a breakthrough technology called Color Trace from Layer 0. Without it, it was impossible to attribute users of a token with a specific issuer, but now we can. USDV is live on Ethereum, Optimism, Arbitrum, and other chains, and is already available on over 20 exchanges such as Curve, BitGet, Velodrome, and Stargate. Start participating in the yield from treasury-backed stablecoins at bankless.com/USDV. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world. And now, something big is happening. Introducing the Celo Layer 2. It's a game-changing proposal that's going to bring Celo's rapidly growing ecosystem home to Ethereum. Vitalik has shared his excitement for the Celo Layer 2 on the Celo forum, so has Ben Jones from Optimism. But why? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages, like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability, and one-block finality. What does all that mean? Rock-solid security, a trustless bridge to Ethereum, and more real-world use cases for Ethereum without compromise. And real-world adoption is happening. Active addresses on Celo have grown over 500% in the last 6 months. With the Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low and you can even pay for gas using ERC-20 tokens. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forum. Follow @Celo.org on Twitter and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum. Pudgy World Alpha from Pudgy Penguins is announced, also going to be releasing in Q1 of 2024. Q1, Ryan, is going to be a hot quarter. Powered by ZK Sync and their hyperchains, Pudgy Penguins tweets out the beginning of a new era of blockchain-backed experiences with the goal of onboarding millions, brought to you by Pudgy Penguins. And there is this cute little animation of this Pudgy world.
It's like Pixar
really
quality.
Good animation.
Yeah.
Yeah. The storytelling could use some help. There's just like a penguin stuck in an iceberg and the iceberg's falling apart. But no, it's good. The animation's great. There's no words, sadly, just some penguin sounds. What was that one penguin-based video game for kids? It's probably before your time, Ryan.
I don't remember.
It was before my time. I barely played it. Anyways, there was this penguin, like
Club Penguin.
Club Penguin. Thank you, Dave. Club Penguin. So it feels like Club Penguin, but in the metaverse now. Okay, so if you buy a Pudgy toy in Walmart or wherever they're resold, you can scan a QR code, which will make your account, and you can redeem your traits and customize your forever Pudgy Penguin. And so, you know, the real world, digital, physical, metaverse, it's coming back, man. It's coming back.
We're trying to get kids hooked on crypto, aren't we? Or starting young.
Yeah, we got to get them early, man.
Plus twice. Somebody's got to buy our bags, David. What is this? Icebergy. Pudgy world means Pudgy token? Oh, they're doing a token?
Yeah.
Is that what this means?
Well, no, they're not doing a token, but okay. Icebergy is saying that they are doing a token. Luca and the Pudgy Penguin team had said, we're not doing a token. But I don't know. Pudgy world might mean Pudgy token.
All right. Well, let's get out of the metaverse for a second. Tell me about Coinbase's Project Diamond. This is a new project name, code name that they rolled out and has some implications here. Maybe Coinbase's base layer 2 is trying to be the real world asset chain. That's what some of this indicates to me. But give us the update here.
Yeah. So Project Diamond is being pitched to help institutions create, buy and sell their own native digital assets. So that means asset minting and asset trading, obviously on Base, because where else are they going to put it? This is from the effort of the exchange's asset management arm that recently debuted this Project Diamond, for a platform for mirroring debt instruments used in traditional finance by tokenizing them on Base. So this actually had an in-production transfer of value between two firms. So on November 10th, the first digital debt instrument on Project Diamond was successfully issued, distributed, and matured on the platform as a technical demonstration of feasibility to the Financial Services Regulatory Authority, as it prepares to join the ADGM, the Abu Dhabi Global Market Regulatory Laboratory Sandbox. So many parts of the world outside of the US are really, really leaning into blockchain-based financial services, and Project Diamond from Coinbase, I guess, it's a dark horse of a project that's coming in to try and take some of the real-world asset tokenization narrative.
Yeah, I mean, well, one thing to keep in mind is as Coinbase kind of manages one of the largest real-world asset assets that there is, which is USDC, which is their stablecoin, right? And so there's already been lots of speculation that they make Base the layer two, the chain, the home chain for USDC. And of course, hopefully we get to the point where we see tokenized treasuries after that as well. Those are two massive real world assets. And I think they can continue to expand. The one nice thing that Coinbase has is it has all of the infrastructure for institutions already, right? You just take like Coinbase Prime, and then they have a Web3 crypto wallet, and now they have a chain, and they can kind of connect all of the pieces and start to deploy real world assets on chain. So I'm excited to see how that evolves, and I feel like this is a flag being planted here. David, speaking of planting flags, VanEck has just rolled out the name of their ETF. What is this?
The HODL Bitcoin ETF, HODL, which is a decent departure from like the more boomery choices from BlackRock, which you would expect from BlackRock. Because who?
Yeah, what's BlackRock's called? Do you know?
It's got to be like BTCE or BTC. Something straightforward and not creative and uninspired, which again is totally appropriate for BlackRock. But VanEck, if you remember their ETH futures ETF ads were like a little surreal and like definitely Zoomer with that like goat.
No, they're trying to appeal to crypto natives. Remember, like VanEck also
a little bit. Yeah,
they also, I believe, sent some of their ETH futures fees to like the Protocol Guild. Like they're very much trying to win the favor of crypto natives, and the ticker symbol HODL is another way to do that. It's really a really cool strategy.
Apparently, the ticker symbol actually really matters because like people are talking about this a lot. So a comment from Nate Garage says, "I like this play. Retail who knows crypto will love the ticker. Boomers will have no idea what it means, so it won't attract any negative attention. Plus, a lot of advisors preach HODL, not with HODL, but like, you know, just hold in other asset classes anyway. So it is a good straddle." I don't want to hear that straddle. Like there's smart money in TradFi if we are making our fundamental analysis on Bitcoin ETFs based on the ticker name.
Hey, but it is all brand at the end of the day, right? And one of these ETFs will be a power law winner is what we keep being told here. Sure.
Moving into where crypto natives like to reside on layer two, is Eclipse testnet is live. If you're not familiar with Eclipse, that is the Solana virtual machine as an Ethereum layer two using Celestia for data availability, gas denominated in ETH. It is a platypus of a layer two. That testnet Eclipse is pretty hotly anticipated, and that testnet is now live. So supposedly ETH can be bridged over and you can deploy contracts there as well. But not just Eclipse, Immutable, the ZK EVM powered by Polygon is now gas free. So what does that mean? It means users, gamers, who are using Immutable's anti-Sybil mechanism, their passport is what they call it. It's like their anti-Sybil mechanism to play games. And so you can take your passport from game to game to game. It's like your player card, if you're a gamer tag, if you will. If you have one of these on Immutable, you don't pay for gas. Immutable pays your gas for you. And this is a take that I had a while, Ryan, where like the entire business model of layer twos and also app chains, which is kind of what Immutable is that their fees are going to become so cheap that the operator of these layer twos or just applications on layer twos are just like, well, we're just going to pay for the transaction fees of our users because that's good UX and it's going to attract users. And we saw this also, Ryan, with Base Chain when they say, hey, if you verify your Coinbase account, we pay your gas fees on Base. And so more and more of layer twos are becoming a no fee environment. So they're all going gas free, which I'm going to call going electric for layer two.
Going electric. Well, I think that's great because there's a narrative right now that's very popular about low gas fee layer ones, right? But you know what's better than low gas fees, David? No gas fees.
No gas fees.
Right? Yeah. So don't even worry. You don't even have to know the concept of gas. And I think that is possible with the economics of layer twos, to your point. So if you go on Immutable.
And we are doing this before EIP 4844. We are doing this in a pre-optimized environment. Can you imagine? When we get bank sharding.
I think very much that mainstream will onboard to crypto without having to worry about all of the economics of gas or gas transaction fees or any of that stuff. And so this is a point pointing in that direction for sure. David, this caught my attention this week. Did you know the IRS is saying FTX, all of the people that are now creditors of FTX, that means they lost, they had funds deposited on the exchange. Mm-hmm. They lost all their funds, went to zero because Sam Bankman-Fried stole it all. The IRS is saying that those people, FTX, in its bankruptcy, owes them $24 billion in unpaid taxes. Okay? They're saying like, hey, before the creditors, all you depositors who put your money in this apparatus, before you get your money, we want our cut. And it's our cut is $24 billion. As far more than FTX actually has. The audacity of this.
Yes.
Dude.
So if you are an FTX creditor, the IRS is like, well, you know, the company owes us a bunch of taxes, so you don't get any of that
Sorry,
money. $24
guys.
Billion dollars is like meaningfully more than FTX is ever going to be able to recover, even though they are doing a great job recovering. So initially, the IRS wanted FTX to pay $44 billion, but then lowered the number to $24
Why?
Billion. Dollars.
That is so arbitrary.
Yeah. So the FTX lawyers are trying to get the IRS to show like how they got to the $24 billion.
Seems
and then the
reasonable.
IRS is like, we just calculated that. It's actually on you to prove that it's not that. So like my take here is that like the IRS is just like, they just come up with a number and they're like, dur, pay us $24 billion. Also, that's the number. And
no.
Don't come complaining.
First they came and they said, it's $44 billion. And they're like, no.
Yeah, right.
It's right. Actually, yeah, it's only $24 billion. We're giving you, the 50% discount here. And the FTX lawyers are like,
and if
oh,
you disagree,
you, get that
you have to prove that you're wrong.
Yeah. But this is a microcosm of how like taxes work.
Broken the tax system
IRS.
Is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it's just they tell you what you owe and you have to try to guess at the number. That's very much what it is with crypto taxes.
Yeah.
So Mike Dudas has a comment here, spicy comment, which I don't blame him. This IRS request is so blatantly insulting to creditors, Americans, and anyone. The arrogance of the U.S. government that flies in the face of any law is staggering. Their demands literally are trying to supersede the recovery of user funds at the same time the SEC sues exchanges to protect customers. That's the wider context here. It's like a whole bunch of people that lost their money. And the IRS is charging them a tax bill. SBF doesn't have to pay this. Hopefully it gets resolved, David. But absolutely ludicrous that they're coming in and trying to collect here.
Well, Jesse Powell was using the word extortion when the SEC came after Kraken the second time inside of a year for another bunch of millions of dollars. And I will put on my extremely libertarian hat, which doesn't come on very often. And Ryan, you want to know what the difference is between extortion and the IRS and the SEC?
The IRS has military behind it.
These groups of people have the monopoly on violence. And if you're charged with extortion, it's just you just didn't
Go
have the
jail.
Army. Sorry about it. Sorry about it.
Can't say no. I'm not someone who's against taxes in general. Taxes are necessary.
No,
I'm a big believer in public infrastructure.
We are a part
goods.
Of a society, but these taxes are dumb.
You actually have to have a reasonable justification for it as well. Anyway, speaking of dumb things, silly things, look at this guy, Gary Gensler. He tweets out, thank Coindesk. You, Coindesk, I guess. What is this, David? Just play the clip?
Sure.
All right, let me play the clip.
We all love Gary Gensler. He's the Taylor Swift of regulation.
When I walk in the room, I can still make the whole place
I'm assuming this CoinDesk talking head was being sarcastic to call Gary Gensler the most influential of 2023. Like, we're just using influential in like this neutral term. It's like, yeah, he influenced people to go abroad and shut down their startups and not issue tokens and overall not file court cases. Yeah. So like he moved a lot of people's time and energy.
Yeah.
Is it a positive influence? Absolutely not. Anyways, so Gary Gensler himself retweets this video of CoinDesk saying he's the most influential of 2023. And he goes, thank you, CoinDesk, I guess, ?
David.
Which also is a farce.
Not only did he retweet it with thank you, CoinDesk, I guess, he paid someone, I assume, at the SEC. It's somebody's job to edit this video and add the T-Swift.
Oh, that's a Gary Gensler edit?
Yes, this is a Gary Gensler influence. Oh. He put the cute, like, you know, T Swift has, you know, cats and stuff. So that's a meme. So he puts a cat in his shoulder, and he scratched out rather than Time's most influential coin. He's trolling us, man. Look at
he
this.
Is trolling us
with our tax money.
Okay, remember April Fools? He put on the deal with it sunglasses on his Twitter profile picture. Yep. And crypto Twitter was like, haha, Gary Gensler is like trolling us. And I'm like, he is admitting that he is just trolling us, and that
I know
that he's not taking this. It's an admission
of
guilt.
He's not taking his job seriously.
It's an admission of guilt that he's just trolling us. And now he's doing it again. This is a Gary Gensler just knowing that he's not saying totally enough to get himself into trouble, but he's admitting to being a fucking troll. Excuse my language.
It's absolutely maddening, and you know, there's nothing we can do about it right now, I guess. Just keep taking those L's in court, Gary, because they're coming for you. Yeah. 2020, if you had enough in 2023, you got some more coming in 2024. David,
he leaves office in 2025, right?
It depends who wins elections. Like, that's another Selkis take that we'll have to get to next Tuesday. I think that episode's coming back, but
thank you for doing that episode.
He could definitely be back for a long time, depending on the election outcomes. Or he could morph into a different David. It's a revolving, like, he could morph into some other place in the cabinet, right?
Yeah, can't AI have some bubble and they can just take Gary Gensler?
Imagine Gary Gensler Secretary of Treasury, if you want to have some nightmares. Think about that.
I don't want to think about that.
All right, let's end with meme of the week. David, what are we looking at?
We got two memes of the week. This is the classic bell curve meme. We've seen these 10,000 times. And you have the middle teary-eyed complainer guy who is in the middle of the curve. And he goes, it's fundamentals, 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 which might be me and Ryan.
Yeah.
And then on the outside, on the left curve and the right curve, it's flows. It's all about flows. It's who's buying and who's buying more in comparison to who is buying last time. So it flows.
Yeah. This one hurts me, actually. But you know what? I've got a meme on top of this. You know that sniper meme with, like, you got the sniper and then behind the sniper is another sniper behind another sniper. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. So behind this meme is another sniper and it's actually fundamentals, because over the long run, fundamentals equals flows. You can't have flows without
flows fundamentals. Follow fundamentals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Is that recursive enough for you?
Yeah. That's pretty. Somebody in the Bankless Nation, please make that.
Do you got a second?
It's like
meme.
Flows shooting fundamentals, shooting flows,
exactly.
Shooting fundamentals.
Exactly. Forever. What's this?
This is a meme, but it's also a warning. This is the man pointing at himself in the mirror and looking at himself, and he goes, "It's not the bull market. You really are a genius. I believe all of our crypto asset portfolios are up bigly over the last month or so, unless you've been shorting, which you're an idiot then. Because it's not because we're geniuses, Ryan. It's because it's a bull market. And that is something that everyone needs to remember as they go into a bull market and they continue to drink that bull market Kool-Aid. You're not actually a genius. You are a genius for sticking around in the bear market. That is what you are smart for. You put in the work, you stick around, you put in the research, you allocate it correctly. Now it's harvest season, but you're not a genius. It's just harvest season. You already were a genius, but you're not any more of a genius.
Oh yeah. Inject that humility into my brain, my bloodstream, David. I'm not going to need it until ETH is over 10K. Then I'm going to feel super smart. But right now I'm just like, I'm still relatively sober, honestly, at this early stage of the bull market. But check yourself. Yeah,
that's because
listeners.
ETH is lagging behind the market. So we are the designated drivers of crypto right now.
Got to let you know, of course, David and I hold lots of different crypto assets. We are long-term investors. We're not journalists. There's always a link to our disclosures in the show notes. And of course, crypto is risky. If you use your Ledger wallet, you will know that from earlier this week. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot. I want to hear the penguin sounds. Sorry. I thought they would be making cute sounds, and it's just like a...
Yeah. No, well, yeah. we'll have to cut that out.
Cut all that out.